Hello, welcome from a ghostly Ops Team studio. This is episode this is episode 21. There we go, in our continually deconstructed surroundings environment here at Building 25 on the Microsoft campus. We're down to two cameras, the GoPros, and no longer are we putting them on the wall. We've decided to take a new approach where we have a tripod now in the middle of the table and GoPros back to back in the single bracket that holds one GoPro, but we've put two because we're a little bit cheap. And I can't show you that because the GoPros are attached. But you'll see with our TriCaster skills here that we've managed to blend both cameras in one. So
super high tech.
Yeah, we won't do that for the whole thing, but we wanted to give you a ghostly apparition to start the show. Let's give you a quick look on construction update. Oh my god, oh no, yeah, there we go. You can see there's somebody, a ladder. There was a guy up there before just singing randomly. That's the other way, that's the inside of the room. So let's go back to where we were. Excellent. Oh, nice work on the camera there. So if you're not familiar with the show, it's a kind of weekly, occasionally weekly, IT professional and DevOps show where we bring you up to speed with stuff that's useful, not necessarily news, because the stuff we talk about now tends to be a week or so old, but just our perspectives, our insights into some of the news and announcements across four key technology areas: on-prem, Azure, DevOps and open source, and enterprise mobility when Simon can make it as well. We're still hiring. We're still hiring if you are interested in joining the ops team. So last episode, it was just myself and Rick. Episode before that, it was myself and David in our studio, in our data center.
Yeah.
Just infinity of servers. That's going right back into the distance. So we're back in our disheveled lab today. So the normal format of the show: we give 5 minutes to each area. We do a spin of something to determine who goes first. I'm just tightening my bottle because I think this may have to be the spinner. So who wants? Do you want to spin it and see who we go first? We can go. Let's cut to David. You won't be able to see the spinner, but I'll try again. Try again.
Okay.
That's you. That's close enough to you. You can kick us off. Right. Yeah, here we go. So
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Here we go. You ready? I need to get 5 minutes on the timer. And your time on DevOps stuff starts. Now.
Okay, well, first off, I'd like to start off by saying Kanban is the new bacon. You didn't notice. That's the big announcement for everybody to know about.
Wow, sausage and Kanban for breakfast.
That's right. I mean, get on with the goodness, right?
Nice.
I mean, there's things like Trello. I learned about something new called Kanban Flow. There's of course VSTS Kanban. You can't live life, I mean, really fully without Kanban, right?
Apparently,
I mean, that's like bacon, right? I mean, why would you not want to have life without bacon? That would just be sad.
I think vegetarians would disagree, but yeah. Is there a veggie Kanban?
All right. Kevin, so that's my first announcement. So after that, though,
we'll provide the links to Kanban and bacon.
Yeah, there you go. So, no, but there are quite a few new episodes of DevOps Dimension, and so one of the ones I'd like to call out is one I did with somebody from Damian Brady from Octopus Deploy. So talking about deployment automation best practices. So we talk about that, but then we also did a interview about how Octopus Deploy works with VSTS. I really regularly get asked questions, often on Twitter, for whatever the reason, about how do I do deployment to my special VM that's there.
Keep going. One of the cameras was shut down because it was too hot.
Too hot.
Okay.
So this is the last 5 minutes.
Okay. Well, we might just have to switch the camera.
No, yours is fine. Okay. Keep going.
Anyway,
it's ours.
Okay. So anyway, yeah. So definitely check that out. But anyway, I really get regularly asked, how do I do deployment to VMs? Well, we realize that, you know, people still want to deploy to VMs. I would say move along, get to containers or PaaS type solution would be ideal. But nonetheless, Octopus Deploy has a lot of cool stuff to help you package up stuff. And there's some good new feeds also on NuGet. We have VSTS has a NuGet package management system. So there's a way to interface with that. So that's my first kind of announcement, is to check those out. Next Next, we also have an interview with Docker. So that's pretty nice, about Docker best practices. And we also have two interviews as well, which I wasn't even there, but maybe you can comment on, Ogus, which was ones from DevOps Days London.
London, yeah. So the first one is with Jin Kim. Mm-hmm. We talk about the future of DevOps. So enterprises are now, like, you know, knowing about this DevOps thing.
There we go. We had to remove the camera from our our little holder because it got too hot. Apparently. Yeah. It is quite warm on my fingers. But you carry on.
For a dream.
Let's try again. There we go. Oh, no.
Let's do this.
We're back.
We've got...
Wow.
Now it's a podcast.
Right, hang on. Let me hold this.
So I'll just continue talking.
Hang on. Hold your headphones.
Yeah.
There we go. I'll hold this. Like this.
Okay.
There we go.
This one. Wow, my 5 minutes has gotten destroyed here by camera.
I'm going to give 2 minutes of mine.
Give you a little bit of time.
So I interviewed two people. The first one is Jin Kim. We talked about the future of DevOps, especially in enterprises. And the second person was Chris Saxon, and we talk about this bimodal IT thing. In case you haven't heard about it, it's like having two different cadences of IT deployments, like one for the legacy deployments and the other one for the unicorn deployments, if I may. And how this bimodal IT approach, it's not working for enterprises because you need to be, you know, see everything in your company as a whole. So if you want to have details about these two interviews, just visit our DevOps Dimension show in Channel 9. And it's back to you.
So yeah, so on the bimodal IT thing, I think it's really interesting because, you know, some people think, I guess, well, if you look at the Gartner definition, it's really kind of confusing, to be totally honest. I mean, yes, you can dig into it, but if you look to the real root of it, it's got a lot of flaws. Now, I have heard of some people, not true to the Gartner definition, refer to bimodal IT as, hey, we have a system which is doing a new way, and we have an old way of doing things. That's how I feel about bimodal IT.
Yeah. the cow exploded. So yeah.
No, but yeah. So I guess, If you're talking about, you know, a DevOps transformation, and the fact that the reality is that you're not going to transform every single application all at once into a modern DevOps practice kind of mode, if that's what you mean by bimodal IT, well then sure, you know, but that's not really true to the Gartner dig into the definition kind of thing. And so I think that's where there's really the challenge in people saying. And the other thing I think that comes up as well is, it's if you have legacy stuff that is really slow and all that, like, you really need to consider, like, you either need to modernize it if it's critical to your business, or get rid of it, or do something else. Like, you shouldn't be doing anything in the old way and just being like, let's just normalize it, right? It just doesn't make sense. So that's all, since we got on the bimodal topic. There is one other thing I want to bring up quickly. There is a new thing in the Visual Studio marketplace for cloning a release definition. Nice. So you know, if you have, like, let's say multiple phases of things, and you want to clone that for, let's say, a different app or a similar type of application, it's not going to be really readily apparent, you know, because you have to install the extension. And so that's another just general tip, is that if you don't find it in the predefined task, go to the marketplace for VSTS, look to see if there's an additional extension you can install there. One of those is actually cloning a release definition. So it makes it really easy to say clone a release definition, then you can, you know, multiply kind of out your release definitions to make things more smooth. That's
really
it.
Nice.
That's what I got. Yeah.
Cool.
Nice. Might have to hand over the camera
because
we're having
a challenge. Okay. So here we go. I'm cameraman.
Yeah, for now.
Let's see.
What's going on here with this?
All right.
Right. Should we spin again?
Yeah.
Let's just make it O's.
Okay. Five-minute countdown.
Yeah, you ready? Yeah. Here we go.
Yeah, yeah. So, first topic is Docker on Windows Server 2016, Technical Preview 5. The huge news for me is now the Windows images can be pushed to or pulled from Docker Hub. So, a lot of customers were asking about this. So, will I be able to use Docker Hub for Windows images? Right now, yes, you can. Now it's full push and pull support for Windows images on Docker Hub. And Docker is working on something about having a manifest to learn about the operating system of the server, or let me put it like this. You just write your Docker file, you want to use this image in normal x86 or ARM. So Docker will intelligently see that it's running on, for example, an ARM server and pull the image that was built for ARM. Right now, you need to have different, you know, Docker files if you want to do something like this. So the idea or the target is you will have just one definition of your application, Dockerized application, and the Docker engine will decide which image should be pulled from Docker Hub, and you're good to go. It's really cool. And second thing is about NanoServer. NanoServer is a lightweight operating system, in case you haven't checked it out. It's like a 400 max Windows server. It doesn't have any graphical interface. You know, it doesn't have any unnecessary parts. It's just like a very small version of Windows server. And you can now deploy Node.js or Python or Django apps running in NanoServer. So it was just .NET up until now, but with the Node.js and Django and Python edition, the open source guys. Why don't you try NanoServer? Just download it. It's 400 max. I think it requires like 10% of the critical updates the full Windows version requires. So that translates into less and less restarts. So it's just like your Linux experience, as I say.
All right.
Yeah. And then we also...
What's the best way for people to start playing with Nano? Like, they don't have any Nano. How do they get going quickly to start putting their apps on it and playing with it?
Yeah, if they look for Node.js on Nano server in their favorite search engine, there's a guide. So basically, they can either download the VHD, there's a ready image, or they can use Azure. It's even easier to start a Nano server and connect. But the experience will be a bit different for Windows admins. For Linux guys, it's the same, but for Windows admins, there is definitely no graphical interface. You cannot add the graphical interface like you would. You were able to do this in the previous versions, like Core version or the Mint shell. It's just like the command line, so you're using it remotely. So if you just look for NanoServer in your favorite search engine, you can just download this. And one thing about Node.js is npm install doesn't work at the moment, so you need to make sure you install all the dependencies and copy this folder to the Nano server. So you cannot do npm install inside Nano server. So just in case,
it's a workaround for now.
Yeah, it's a workaround. I don't know about the future thing, but right now it's like this. And we announced support for PHP 7 in Azure App Service. We announced the experimental availability back in November, and now it's supported. It's generally available. So if you have any PHP 7 apps, now you can use Azure App Service, and it supports both 32 bits and 64 bits, nice. If I recall correctly.
That guy was conveniently drilling over your topic there. Bzz, 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 bzz. You probably picked that up.
Yeah, as long
we
as
definitely
it doesn't
are in a construction zone, that's for sure.
And finally, it's not really, I don't know, fits our open source theme.
You can't talk about it then.
I'm going to talk about it anyway, because I had problems in college, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, running MATLAB. Are you familiar with MATLAB? It's like
That's the name I should take for our lab. MATLAB, yeah.
MATLAB.
Come to MATLAB.
So it's like a mathematical simulation program.
Boring.
And it's boring, and it was a pain to install clusters. Right. Now you can just use Edge Resource Manager templates to deploy clustered MATLAB instances. Hello. In Azure.
Wow. Okay. The utmost level of professionalism on the ops team here. Right. Anything else? That your final news thing?
No.
That wasn't your final news thing.
It was my final.
All right. Excellent. We are done. Right. So let's bring people up to speed with what I've been doing with the camera work. This dongle does not work. This is a full-size HDMI to some kind of middle-sized HDMI. Fail. This is a full-size HDMI to a teeny-weeny HDMI that would normally go in the GoPro. Fail. This is a middle-sized HDMI to a tiny HDMI. Failed. My dongle, however, is working. And we can cut to camera number 4. We need to go to 4 input on the top row there. There we go. Look. Working now. So we're going to take a quick commercial break and get our cameras all working again. So bear with us and we should be back in a second. We're back. We fixed the camera. I can see a little message keeps popping up on the TriCaster, so I'm hoping that it's not saying there's a catastrophic failure and this isn't working. But we've fixed our camera problems, so we go for us and we go to David. There we go. And we go back to us. Boom. And we can do it with fade.
No.
No, we can't. We've not fixed it. Never mind. Yeah. We'll carry on. So 5 minutes on my stuff. I'll do Azure first and see how long I've got left, and then I'll just blend it into the next topic, which is on-prem technology. So the first thing I want to talk about with Azure... Oh, both cameras have gone off now.
Yeah.
This is just...
The...
Is it gone?
Maybe, because it blinked red. Yeah.
That's on.
Right, so kicking off my 5 minutes after that short commercial break again, where we lost the battery on the camera. It's just a camera catastrophe is just happening here, dongles and all. So first up in Azure, I've got a load of cool resources that I want to bring you up to speed with that I think are going to be very relevant for your learning as we go forward. Now, the first one is around using Azure Resource Manager. Now, it's not something new that this course that I'm going to talk about. It's an MVA, a Microsoft Virtual Academy. And this course is called Building Infrastructure in Azure Using ARM. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up, it was something that was flagged to me on my feed as being interesting. And I think it's very interesting for you guys as well as we now approach Azure Stack. Because all of this learning that they'll talk about in this MVA course, which I will link to, is equally now useful for when you start to deploy on Azure Stack. So a very highly recommended infrastructure course using ARM. And loads of modules there to help you understand what's going on. In addition to that, there's a series of introductory courses, and they go deeper as they go along. I think it's 6 parts in total, on Azure Automation DSC. Some people now know this as OMS Automation, Operations Management Suite Automation. Whatever way you call it, if you want to know about automation and DSC from Azure for your on-prem and for Azure-based resources, Ben Galens, an MVP, PowerShell MVP, has done an awesome course. There's 6 parts. It's all linked to on Channel 9. So introduction, configuration basics, onboarding Azure nodes, advanced onboarding, advanced configuration. So loads of cool stuff there. Definitely worth checking out. And a hat tip to Ben for his work there in the MVP community. And I actually met Ben last week when I was in Germany. And yeah, great guy, doing a lot with PowerShell and DSC. So nice work, Ben. Some more Azure news. There's you may have seen the announcement around running SAP on Azure, specifically SAP HANA. So really high scale, really high performance SAP workloads. Azure is providing the ability to handle the largest SAP HANA production workloads of any hyperscale public cloud provider. So when you think about Amazon, you think about Google Cloud, you think about Azure, we are leading the pack in terms of being able to deliver the largest Azure infrastructure support for those kind of workloads. And SAP HANA or SAP HANA workloads are massive. They're hugely scalable. You need some significant resource to run them. So there's loads of resources in this blog post that I'll link to around the images that are going to be available in the Azure Marketplace, how you provide great scale across highly available configurations and so on. So loads of stuff there. Some of the instances on Azure are pretty impressive. So 4 Intel Xeon processor E7s 8890s, 3 terabytes of RAM, 12 terabytes of storage. all for $2.99 a month. No, I'm kidding. It would be a little bit more expensive than that. But you can check out that in the marketplace. Either way, if you're running SAP, you're interested in SAP HANA, and you want to run it on a cloud platform, Azure is the way to go for that. And then sticking with Azure before I transition onto on-prem stuff is around a new set of test drives. Now, we're all about helping enable you to learn stuff as quickly as possible with the minimal friction to stop you doing that. So this new test drive program, if you're interested in running certain workloads on Azure from our partner community, there's a number of these new test drives that are available in the Azure Marketplace that you can essentially just deploy for free for trial of pre-configured virtual machines in Azure. So the blog that I'll link to will show you that it's a sandbox environment where you can evaluate these third-party solutions from a variety of partners. And if we look on the page, there's stuff from Trend Micro, there's stuff from NetApp, there's stuff from Zuse Linux, the VM Turbo, there's all sorts of ones, little appliances that you think, oh, I might just give that a go. And if you like it, then you can deploy it properly from the marketplace in production. So definitely worthwhile checking out.
Yeah, nice.
So that's the Azure news. Now I'm going to transition across to my on-premises news. So roll the bumper. And we're back from the bumper. Right, so on-prem stuff. There's a couple of things that I wanted to talk about. Now, the first one is a Microsoft Mechanics shameless plug for the show, Microsoft Mechanics episode on shielded VMs. Now, if there's any feature in Windows Server 2016 Hyper-V that I urge you to consider, have a look at, test, and kick the tires with, and the kicking the tires, it's a little bit complex, but still, you know, give it a go, it's shielded VMs, enabling you to really offer that highest level of protection of data and workloads within a virtual environment on Hyper-V. And no other virtualization vendor offers anything like shielded VMs. It's incredibly powerful, ensuring that you can not only protect against malware and corruption of virtual machines, from malicious corruption at least, but also against a non-trusted admin or an admin who's perhaps become a little bit unhappy and wants to sabotage perhaps the environment. So a good example would be, I'm the virtualization admin. You give me your domain controllers to run in my environment. You think, well, he doesn't know my domain creds. He can't log into my domain controller. Well, there's nothing stopping me grabbing the virtual hard disk from that domain controller, taking it home, spinning it up on my portable personal Hyper-V environment, double-click the virtual disk, just mount the virtual disk, and I can see the complete file structure of your Active Directory domain controller. And then I run one of a multitude of commercially available or freely available cracking tools for hacking Active Directory, and I obtain all the passwords for your AD, and I'm good to go.
NTS.dit.
That's your preference, yes. There you go. The thing about shielded VMs, it protects against that sort of stuff. So that's really important. That kind of scenario and many more, very important. There's lots of infrastructure moving parts for how shielded VM works. So check out the Microsoft Mechanics episode because Dean does a fantastic job of explaining all those key components and shows it you in action as well. So shameless plug. Next key thing is around the server management tools. Catchy name, but for what it is, server management tools are an Azure-based server management GUI, particularly for managing nano servers, mm-hmm. like we talked about before, but can also be used for managing GUI and server core-based installations of Windows Server. Now, the nice thing about server management tools is it's an Azure-like experience, very rich and slick, but there's been a new feature added just recently in the last couple of days around Windows Update. So now you can trigger, control, view the list of available updates, schedule restarts, monitor success and failure of update installations for your nanos, for your server core, and for your full GUI from this cloud-based server management tools interface. So that's pretty cool, pretty useful as well. The last couple of things, a couple of videos that have newly been added that I think you should definitely check out. On the Windows Server channel, which I'll provide the links for, the storage team have been busy showcasing some key scenarios around their storage stack. So an REFS performance demo, storage replica thin provision storage demo. They're very short, they're only a couple of minutes. So one's a minute 15 seconds, another is 2 minutes, 7 seconds. But we're showing things like 60 gigabytes per second transfer speed within the environment. It's an incredible performance reflection of what we're doing in the platform. So check out those. On the containers channel, a new video on Windows Container Networking, because in TP5, Tech Preview 5, there was a significant overhaul of the networking stack. So definitely worth checking out, understanding Jason Messer talk through what the key components are and doing some demos with Docker on how the networking has changed in Windows Server 2016 as it relates to containers. And then the final area is around the Azure Stack channel. Again, the engineering team have been busy helping you understand how you can deploy more efficiently. Latest couple of videos are around how you deploy hybrid VMs with the same ARM template and PowerShell script to on-prem and Azure. And finally, how you deploy the new web apps resource provider to Azure Stack. So enabling you to provide to your tenants things like web apps, the sample web application, Django, and a number of others in the marketplace list there that within Azure Stack. So that is my 5 minutes on-prem stuff that I wanted to talk about. Apologies again for all of the camera mishaps. We'll definitely get it fixed for next time as more things break as we go along. So is there anything else that we need to check out? Let's have a look on Twitter for the ops team. I don't think there was anything specific, but let's have a look. Anything more from you that you want to talk about?
I mean, the DevOps Days London videos are live.
So okay, so we can link to that.
You can just go and watch the sessions. There are some seriously good sessions.
Yeah.
Including Thiago Almeida's session. This is one of our own. So he talked about how Microsoft is doing mobile DevOps.
Nice. Kind of, so similar to what you had in your episode a couple of weeks ago on the show. Anything from you, man? Do we need to turn the camera around? Or do you just want to come around?
Yeah. I can just come around. Come around. There we go.
Save us moving the camera. Oh, that's nice. Anything more from you then?
No, we're good.
So the followers have just gone through the roof. We're now up to 327. So thank you for following the show. Keep it up. I think there's been some significant marketing push. Well, significant. There's been some marketing push associated with a various number of assets that's helping drive that number. But hopefully you're finding the show interesting. If not, let us know. What can we talk about? What do you want us to talk about? We're always up for listening to your feedback. And if you've got any decent cameras that you're not using anymore and perhaps a whole production studio, send it our way. We will certainly use it. But with that, let's sign off and we shall see you again in episode 22 next time. Thanks for watching.